where I grew up going to church, we had folks that had been in church for years. You could learn by just watching them do some things. I mean, my little Bible class teacher, when she would teach a little healthy lady that would stand up at the front, and she would teach us, and she taught us from the Bible. So early on, I learned that there are, first thing I learned, there were good stories in the Bible, and I wanted to hear them. But then I began to learn as I got older, there's not just good stories. There's good stuff. This is good stuff for us. It's right here in the Word. But I learned that from watching her. Of course, watching my mother and dad, I saw the same thing. I remember watching and learning how to take the Lord's Supper. You know, you don't think about that, but when you're a kid, you're not paying attention, right? So when I got ready to obey Jesus and I got ready to start taking the Lord's Supper, I started paying attention to how people took it. And there was a fella that sat right across the church building from where I sat. And when he took the church, when he took the communion, he took off his glasses and he would hold his head like this. I don't know why he held his head like this. He just did. But so I did it too, because I thought that would help. I don't know that it helped, but that's how I learned. I watched him. One time, and it's just once, I peeked at a fella while he was praying. Okay. Yeah, did you hear my mother clear her voice? My mother used to get on us all the time for peeking during a prayer. My brothers, for them peeking in the prayer. And it dawned on me after I got about 35, how did she know we were peeking if she wasn't peeking? All right? But I watched him pray. When he was leading a public prayer, I watched him, and I noticed that he didn't bow. So I learned to pray. I learned to pray without bowing my head during a public prayer. You're thinking, that's silly stuff. I learned church by watching people do church. There's a point to this foolishness. I learned church prayers by listening to men pray church prayers. Now, you're not going to hear me criticize that, because I learned some things about praying. God was always addressed with honor and respect, always. Jesus was always mentioned with a submissive and grateful tone and words. I loved that. I learned from that. I learned some of the phrases, guide, guard, and direct. You've been to church too, right? Right. You've heard us pray, and I heard it just the last week. Lord, bless our leaders who overlook us. I don't think he meant overlook. I think he meant oversee, but he prayed it for the leaders. I remember a guy praying for the sick one time, and he said, Lord, bless all those who are sick of this church. I don't think he meant what I thought he meant, but he was praying for me. And so I learned church. I learned those things by watching someone. But in this room, and there's so many things. I learned about giving from watching people give. There was never a Sunday in my life that I can remember that my dad didn't take out his billfold and not just him give, but he made sure each one of us boys had something to give. And it wasn't the amount, but he was teaching us a habit. We make a decision to honor God with that gift and to help other people with that gift. So I learned so many things like that. I learned about singing and learned how to sing hymns by sitting with beside my mother and listening to her sing hymns. But now here's what the whole point of that is this. In this room, we have people that did not grow up with that kind of blessing, that kind of benefit. There are people sitting in this room. This is the very first, quote, church they've ever been in. They've not heard the church house prayers. They've not seen or heard the church house hymns. They've not ever heard a real preacher. Bless their hearts. There's so many things they haven't seen. So here's what I believe took place in the book of Hebrews. You got your Bibles? Go to Hebrews. In Hebrews chapter 11, this man starts writing a letter to this church and telling them there are people you can follow, you can imitate. You may not have had the mama I had. You may not have had the dad I had. But there are people who live their lives by faith. And because they live by their life by faith, you can follow them and live your life by faith too. Hebrews chapter 11, because we've got some fresh faces, let's focus on verse 6 first. No apologies for the repetition for those of us who've studied it. Because if you know me, you figure we better go over it again. Verse 6. How important is faith? You read it from the text and tell me so you know I'm not making it up. How important is faith? You cannot please God without faith. It's impossible to please God without faith. So go ahead and let's mark it down. Let's get a hold of one of those. It's one of those simple truths. If I want to please God, I must have faith. Now, I may not always understand what faith is. I may not understand what always faith demands. But I understand this, that if I don't have faith, I can't please God. So keep reading and see what I learn about faith. He said, but anyone who comes to Him must believe that He exists. So there you go. Number one, if you want to please God, you must first believe that He exists. That's just a matter of conviction, okay? You just got to be convicted that God exists. And keep reading. And that He rewards those who earnestly seek Him. Look at that word rewards. Underline it. In that word is implied a confidence that I'm going to do what God wants me to do, believing that God is going to reward me. He's going to give me what He promised. One more time. I've got to have a conviction that He exists. And then I've got to have confidence that He keeps His promises. What happens if we live our lives and do all this and refuse all this bad and do all this good, and in the end, it just doesn't help? The faith is you believe it's going to help even when you're not for sure you know how it will help. It's a matter of conviction. It's a matter of confidence. Look at the last one. And who earnestly seek Him. I love the phrase, earnestly seek Him. This is folks that are not, this is not about sitting in church, y'all. This is not about sitting at church. Being able to say, I've been in church all my life. No. Earnestly seek Him means sincerely wanting to be with Him. Sincerely wanting to please Him. Sincerely wanting to do His will. So in this room, we're not talking about church. We're not talking about religions. We're not talking about issues. We're going to talk about living by faith. I had great examples of that. They're still here, and I thank God for that. But if you didn't have that great example, here's some great examples. Now you tell me, so you know I'm not making it up, who are some of the examples? Stay in Hebrews 11. Who are some of the examples that God gave us that we've discussed that show us how to please Him, how to obey Him, how to seek Him? Abel. How about Abel? And his faith lives on. And I believe it's true. I believe it's true long after I'm gone. If I have lived my life by faith, that faith will live on. I've seen it true in other people. I've seen it true in Abel. Why can't it be true in us? All right, give me another one. How about Enoch? Went for a walk with God, and God took him. Just took him home. And then there's Noah. Do you remember anything about Noah? I know he lived his life by faith. Well, what's one thing we remember about if you live your life by faith, like Noah, if you follow his example, what can you do? You can find grace. And that's going to get you through the toughest of times, even when you deserve it the least. What about Noah? What'd you learn? That's what faith is. He believed in something he had never seen. He was convinced of something that he had never experienced. Anything else you remember about Noah? He obeyed God. I love how simple that is. He obeyed God. There wasn't a fussing, discussing. There wasn't any kind of negotiation, any kind of compromise. God said it. That settled it. In fact, I need to say that. the father, grandfather of this bunch and husband of this bunch, is a friend of mine, for teacher of mine, mentor of mine for years and years. He's gone to be with the Lord and receive His glory. But I saw a bumper sticker one day. I was living in Lubbock and working there with him, and I saw a bumper sticker on the back of a car, and I came in, I said, Klein, I saw a great bumper sticker. Here's what it said. It said, God said it, I believe it, that settles it. I said, is that not great? He did not hesitate. He said, well, I'd have changed it. I said, what would you have changed about it? Because I thought he was perfect. He said, God said it, that settles it, whether I believe it or not. Isn't that the point? And that's the way Noah was. That's how Abel was. That's how Enoch was. That's how Noah was. That's how Abraham was. You got verse 8 yet? Look at verse 8. Here's our discussion. By faith, Abraham, when called to go to a place he would later receive his inheritance, obeyed and went, even though he did not know where he was going. By faith, he made his home in the promised land like a stranger in a foreign country. He lived in tents, as did Isaac and Jacob, who were heirs with him of the same promise. For he was looking forward to the city with foundations whose architect and builder is God. Now, that's our section today. We're going to watch Abraham live by faith, with the thought that if you didn't have a mother, or if you didn't have a father that lived by faith, if you didn't grow up in a church that gave you all kinds of examples of living by faith, if you weren't blessed in your life to have those kind of examples, here's an example. First one, circle it. By faith, Abraham did what? I want you to look for what he did. Underline it. He did what? He obeyed. That's how simple it is. It's not about understanding. It's not about being able to explain. It's not about being able to argue it and prove your point. It's simple enough to say, when God says it, that settles it. I should obey it. I should just do it. Now look what he said. He obeyed and went. Now, I don't know that we've got the time to do it, but what would have been a challenge to him? Explain to me the issues that might have been available to him to argue with God about this, or to what's the word we want? To rationalize why he shouldn't do it. God said, "I want you to go to this land." So he obeyed and went. What could he have done? What arguments could he have made to stay?
Why?
There's people living in that land. There's
my family's in this one.
You're going to tell my wife we're moving? I mean, there's all kinds of issues there, right? The logistics of moving all of those servants, the logistics of moving that wife and all of her pretties, and they lived where? In tents. Moved out of a home into a tent. There's all kinds of discussions there. But simplify it. What did Abraham do? He obeyed. Now, the next phrase I think is more significant even. He obeyed even though what? He did not know where he was going. Do you have to understand why God wants something in order to do it? Now, I got to say this because I hear it a lot. I hear it a lot from us even. I do better, quote, I do better if I understand why somebody wants me to do something. You know what that honestly is when we say something like that? When we say, I do better doing what somebody wants me to do if I understand why they want me to do it. Basically, what we're saying is,
I don't trust them.
I don't trust them, and I want to be in charge. When Abraham obeyed God, did he understand where he was going? Did he understand why he was going? Did he understand anything that was going to happen in his life? One thing, and we're getting to that at the last point. But Abraham obeyed God. So underline it. If we're going to live our lives by faith, we start there. When I wake up in the morning, I decide I'm going to obey God. Yeah, but I got a lot of bills to pay. Obey God. Yeah, but you don't understand. And my wife doesn't understand me. Oh, you got to obey God. You don't understand. My family is in crisis. I know I don't understand it. You got to obey God. My boss is going to fire me. Obey God. I can't pay my bills. Obey God. Nobody loves me. Everybody hates me. Obey God. Simplify your life. Live it by faith. Obey God. Now look at the next verse 9. By faith, he made his home in the promised land like a stranger. Now we've got, it's not always easy for us to talk when we've got lots of visitors. So let me cut through this so we get to the point that really matters. To live like a stranger in a foreign country, positive or negative? Negative. Mistreated by the folks, don't feel at home, don't feel in place. Keep reading. He lived in tents. That's a lot of... Now, if you're a kid, it's a big deal to have a tent, right? I built tents inside my house. I built tents in the backyard. I built tents out in my grandparents' pasture. We went to the mountains and stayed in tents. It was a great thing to stay in a tent for.
A little while.
Because what happened? You in a tent for long, what's going to happen? Oh, I guarantee you put up a tent, it's going to rain. There you go. Wind's going to blow. Bugs are going to crawl. And every kid I ever knew that ever liked staying in a tent, if it started to rain and it started and the wind started to blow and the bugs started to crawl, what did that kid want to do? Who loved tents, wanted to be in that tent. What does he want to do? And Abraham lived in a tent with his wife. And there's not a wall that you can hang the picture on in a tent. And you can't put little knickknacks around in a tent. But you can move the furniture around a lot in a tent. All right, keep reading. There are some benefits, I told you, okay? He lived as a stranger, lived in a tent. Now, why did he do all that? Look at verse 10. Because he knew that he was going to get this land as a possession before he died. Right? Did he know that he... Now, these are questions for folks that have read this before, so go ahead and answer it. He did all this. He went to this land that he didn't know where he was going. He lived as a stranger, lived in a tent with all the challenges that would be, and he did that because he knew God was going to give him that land as a possession before he died. Right? Wrong. He did it because he knew that his boys would inherit that land. Isaac would inherit that land before he died. No. He knew Jacob at least would inherit that land before he died, right? No. He had been told by God that he would die and rest with his fathers, and 400 years would pass before his descendants came back and took the land. Did he do this because he knew there was an immediate response from God for him? No. Our fast food, throwaway culture, we want something right now. You have, I know you, I love you, but we have done it. We've done it in here. We started praying for something, and when it didn't happen by the next week, we were frustrated. When it didn't happen by the next month, we were frustrated. When it didn't happen for 6 months, we finally decided that God wasn't listening anymore, and we just quit praying about it. 400 years before Abraham's family took possession of this land. So was he doing it to take possession of that land? No. Why was he doing it? Look in the verse. Why was he doing it? Why did he leave home? Why did he live as a stranger? Why did he put camp out in that tent? Why did he do it? Because he was looking forward to the city with foundations whose architect and builder is God. And that's not any place on this dirt. That's not any place on this soil, on this earth. The builder, the architect, and whose builder is God, that city is a city with foundation where he waits for us right now. So what do I want? Do I want my bills paid? Yes, sir, I do. Do I want to make a good living? Yes, you betcha. But I'd like to be able to have a nice retirement where I could go fishing now and again. Yeah, it'd be fine. I'd love that. What should I be looking for? What should I be living for? I'm looking for that city whose architect and builder is God. I'm driving to Houston this afternoon, so be praying about that. I've got my little Tom-Tom. I've nicknamed her Tina Turner because it's a woman's voice and it tells me to turn, so Tina Turner. And then, well, we won't go on the other reason, but Tina is going to tell me when I get to Houston. And when she finally gets me to Houston, I'll stop and I'll crawl out of that pickup and I will be glad to be there. But that's where my journey will stop. If I'm living my life by faith and I'm looking for that city whose the foundation is, the architect and builder is God, when do I finish my journey? When do I stop walking? When do I stop seeking? When do I stop traveling? Not until I get there. Folks, I don't know what will happen. I don't know what will happen in this group in our lifetime. I suspect we're going to face some tough things. I suspect we're going to face some marriages in trouble. And I suspect we're going to face some difficulty with finances and with jobs. I suspect we're going to face some difficulties with disease and death. I suspect we're going to face some challenges even with church fusses and stuff. It happens. That stuff happens all the time. But we're not finished until what? We're not finished till we get home to that city with a foundation. Till God, we get to that city that God built for us. That's what kept Abraham obeying. That's what kept Abraham traveling. That's what kept Abraham living in that tent, living as a stranger. That's what kept him living by faith, looking for that city. Let's don't stop till we get there. Okay? Let's don't stop until we get there. So that on that last day, we're all together. Together in that place with him.